I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you're going to hear the first part of a speech by Barry Zwicker given at the Understanding Deep Politics Conference in Santa Cruz, California, on May 16, 2010. That'll be followed by some 9/11 and related news updates. So here's some background information on Barry. Barry Zwicker was the first journalist in the world to go on national TV to deeply question the official story of 9/11. He's a writer, TV producer, and host, and a political and environmental activist. He was director of the International Citizens Inquiry into 9/11, Phase 2, at the University of Toronto in May of 2004. I actually went to that conference, and that's when I first got really interested in 9/11. He produced the DVD, The Great Conspiracy, the 9/11 news special you never saw. And he's the author of the book, Towers of Deception, The Media Cover-Up of 9/11. So here's Barry with the first part of his speech.
I am really happy to be here. I feel very warm and very much at home here. I've got a really good feeling. Peter Dale Scott has done more than anyone else I know to introduce the concept of the deep state, capital D, capital S, and educate widely about it. But there is something deeper than the deep state, and that is the deep state, all caps, of the crisis we're in as a planet and as a civilization. Now, needless to say, the deep state and the state we're in are deeply connected, as are the steps we need to take to emerge with luck into an improved state. So I rely on a book in the early going here. This book is A Short History of Progress by Ronald Wright. He's a Canadian novelist and essayist and historian. And in just 132 pages, Wright does the best job I've ever encountered of explaining why civilizations crash and nailing the pickle we're in today and offering a general solution. Wright is aware of deep politics, as revealed in his latest book, which is What is America? And I would recommend that book, too. Now, there's a graffiti that reads, "Each time history repeats itself, the price goes up." And Wright quotes this to begin in his final chapter in A Short History of Progress. And in that chapter, he also nails down what most history books fail to emphasize, that throughout history, oligarchies have been the dreadful default in human governance. It's, I think, virtually without exception. And another history book that's also an exception to the rule is Michael Parenti's Democracy for the Few. I think I only have about six of Michael's books, but that's one of them. And just the subsection in Chapter 2 called Capital Concentration, Who Owns America, should be required reading for everyone everywhere. Now, the oligarchs and their many Machiavellian minions never identify themselves as problem. They're too wrapped up in their narcissistic power games and career paths to take even a day off to try to see themselves in the perspective of history. Or if they do, they see themselves as heroes, saviors of whatever current empire they serve and its assumed superior values. According to Wright, no group of oligarchs has ever self-corrected. So why would we expect the current one to? I wish Wright had touched on the role of psychopaths in these oligarchical pyramids, as he calls them. My psychologist truther friend, Dr. Terry Burrows, says, the higher you go in any organization, the more likely you are to encounter a psychopath. Or be one, quipped my friend Frank Denson. The upward concentration of wealth, says Wright, ensures that there can never be enough to go around. Thinkers from Christ to Marx have touched on this deep problem. Now, I'm going to assume that everyone here today knows about the grotesque and growing gap between the super rich and the rich on the one hand, and the middle class and the poor and the poorest of the poor on the other. And I'm going to assume also that no one here believes this situation is either just or sustainable. Now, Wright continues, the concentration of power at the top of large-scale societies gives the elite a vested interest in the status quo. They continue to prosper in darkening times long after the environment and general populace have begun to suffer. He calls it the dinosaur factor, hostility to change from vested interests, plus inertia at all social levels. Anyway, all this is a framework within which the phenomena of repeated false flag operations can be approached historically. False flag operations are history's deadliest secrets, and that's the title of the book I'm working on. They are the best kept of the many dirty secrets of oligarchies. They are used to trigger and justify the oligarch's wars for power, prestige, land, and resources. Most false flag events are unopposed military operations. The perpetrators have all the advantages, virtually endless technical, administrative, logistical, and other resources, secrecy, surprise, and other kinds of power. And they specialize in knowing about and cynically taking advantage of human gullibility. We're not all to blame. Responsibility is shared for the way the world is. And obviously, the people are not to blame, but are not entirely blameless. But we do have tendencies towards short-term thinking. Wright goes into it in the book. He says it's because we spent millions of years as hunters and gatherers. We didn't have to think, and it didn't pay to think past the next day. And that's the way our brains, a huge part of our brains, are still wired, which is why we need conscious evolution to build our brains to be able to think in the long range. And that's one of the main points of this book. Now, their false flags enable, that's the oligarchs, and cover up the bloody coups that come so naturally to them. In the coup, the false flag is the patsy. Members of the public are recruited as the dupes. What a surprising number of lone nut gunmen have decided to change history, eh? False flag ops are the most effective of the oligarchs' spectrum of deceptions for seizing, expanding, and maintaining their power, wealth, and privileges. But false flag operations have never made it onto humanity's radar. The never-ending secrecy, the seemingly never-ending human gullibility, and the fact that history is written by the victors has ensured this so far. Even Wright mentions 9/11 only for purposes of comparison, and I quote, "Terrorism is a small threat compared with hunger, disease, or climate change. 3,000 died in the United States that day. 25,000 in the world die every day from contaminated water alone," unquote. His emphasis, fair enough. His apparent acceptance of the official version of the 9/11 conspiracy, unfortunate. There are three categories of false flag. There are events, there are agents, and there are fronts. The events, which can also be pseudo-events where nothing happens, as nothing happened in the Gulf of Tonkin that night. The events exhibit three phases: planning, execution, and cover-up. The planning, which includes planning for the cover-up, is executed in utmost secrecy, as is the execution, of course. The all-important cover-up is the most expensive and extended and atypical phase of the operation. By definition, the cover-up is not secret. It's in your face. For the cover-up, the pre-existing overt and covert establishment is brought into play, including pop-up talking heads and choke point operatives in the media, as well as false flag fronts, from the likes of NIST to publishing houses and on, all of which already have false flag agents of the state permanently embedded in them. This can explain a lot when you get into it. But there are, contrary to the old saying, a couple of new things under the sun. And one of these new things is literal. The events of 9/11 were committed in broad daylight. That's new under the sun. It made them the most brazen false flag op of all time. That makes 9/11 a gift that keeps on giving. It has drained for those with eyes to see much of the swamp of the deep state. Many Machiavellian swamp creatures are exposed to the gaze of the unblind. These creatures include the mainstream media, covered with the slime of their refusal to question, let alone investigate, the anomalies, contradictions, absurdities, and impossibilities of 9/11 and their demonization of those who want to investigate or even question the events of that day. Equally disgusting, I may say, are the mud-caked gatekeepers of the left and the apologist community of public intellectuals, all foes of 9/11 truth and of the 9/11 truth movement. Maybe I'm being too extreme, Maybe I'm being too emotional, too harsh, speaking with too little academic detachment. Be that as it may, the determined enmity of the media and left gatekeepers it bugs me to hell. And it's real and it's ongoing and it proves the importance of the 9/11 truth movement. As Mickey Huff said so eloquently last evening, there must be no issues we cannot talk about, and this is one of them. The second new thing under the sun is that there's a quantitative and qualitative difference between the state of public understanding today of 9/11 and the state of public understanding of all previous false flag ops. Chalk up that difference, I suppose, to two words, the Internet. Until the advent of the so-called war on terror, almost no false flag events were laughable. But now the masters of psyops, their twisted minds marinated in an excited delirium of unaccountable deception and impunity, are laying down between train bombings a slap-happy hit parade of preposterous false flag ops. You had Richard Reed, the shoe bomber. He lit the match that ludicrously continues to remove millions of shoes at airports, as I had to take off these ones a couple of days ago. You had the 2006 transatlantic exploding shampoo terror fraud. That led to dandruff eradication for thousands of airport security personnel. You had the well-to-do one-way ticket no baggage had been banned from Britain underwear bomber. As Conan O'Brien put it, it's now been reported that Britain did pass information on to the U.S. authorities about the attempted underwear bomber, but the U.S. disregarded it. In part, that's because the British intelligence referred to him as a bloke with boomsy-woomsy in his knickers. You had the murderous Fort Hood Muslim padre under-surveilled by the well-known civil libertarians in the Pentagon. And now the Times Square fireworks-packed Nissan Pathfinder, the one with the big back window. As Globe and Mail columnist Tabitha Southey, who owns a Pathfinder, commented, "Anyone walking by that car in Times Square could have seen exactly how stupid-looking the bomb was. If there's one thing I know about New Yorkers, it's that they're not going to hold back about something like that. You try to blow up New York City with a crap bomb, you're going to hear about it. I've known people who realized too late they'd carried the wrong handbag to a party in New York. They left that party immediately and booked a flight to Saudi Arabia on the way to the airport." As she says, Faisal Shahzad's plan was, well, if this doesn't work out, I can always grow heritage tomatoes. Now, progressive people have got a daunting to-get-done list if the worst of the coming collapse is to be mitigated. Sorry to be prescriptive about that. Here's how Wright puts it at the very end of his book. "The case for reform that I've tried to make is not based on altruism, nor on saving nature for its own sake. These are moral imperatives, but such arguments cut against the grain of human desire. The most compelling reason for reforming our system is that the system is a suicide machine. Things are moving so fast," Wright continues, "that inaction itself is one of the biggest mistakes. The 10,000-year experiment of the settled life will stand or fall by what we do and don't do now." He continues, "We have the tools and the means to share resources, clean up pollution, dispense basic health care and birth control, set economic limits in line with natural ones. If we don't do these things now, while we prosper, we will never be able to do them when times get hard. Our fate will twist out of our hands, and this new century will not grow very old before we enter an age of chaos and collapse that will dwarf all the dark ages in our past. Now is our last chance to get the future right." Now, Ronald Wright says that his key reform, educating for long-term thinking, okay, that's his key reform, isn't anti-capitalist. Well, this doesn't mean that a lot of capitalists or socialists or others will agree with him. In fact, monopoly capitalism and long-term and possibly even short-term survival seem to me to be inimical to each other. Also, education for long-term thinking seems awfully vague. We need more specific projects to undermine the juggernaut, thereby making space to grow for the thousands of local initiatives the world over for environment, for peace, and for economic and social justice to build. Because 9/11 is the largest Achilles heel of the largest oligarchy ever, arguably, the single most important task on that to-get-done list is exposing the truth of 9/11 in the most politically relevant way possible for a significant fraction of the world public in hopes that this can trigger an earthquake for the network of oligarchies. I doubt anyone here underestimates the challenge. Possibly the best model for reinvestigation that is required is the 1967 War Crimes Tribunal, initiated by the British philosopher and peace activist Bertrand Russell. He's my main hero. I refer to him in some detail and his tribunal later. It remains significant that the first chapter of his book, War Crimes in Vietnam, is devoted to the press. The first sentence of that chapter, "The role of the Western press in the Vietnam controversy has been important and revealing. It is from Western newspapers that I derived my earliest understandings of the involvement of the United States, and it is from these same reports that I first became aware of the barbarous character of the war." And he then provides examples of these Western newspaper reports that alerted him to the barbarism of that war. But he continues, and the parallels with our time are hard to miss. "I was soon to discover, however," he wrote, "that although some newspapers were prepared to publish isolated pieces of horrifying information, they had no intention of forming a coherent picture of the war from these reports and every intention of preventing others from doing so." So we're not facing a new problem with our present media, not to downplay it. Let's unbundle our slogan just for a moment. Reinvestigate 9/11 is a simple slogan. It's a unifying force within the 9/11 truth movement. All the truthers I've met accept reinvestigation as a common goal and the highest. The sign Richard Gage travels with is a variation. Quote, "Over 1,000 architects and engineers demand a real 9/11 investigation," unquote. Now, Mark Phillips, the other day, he suggested that the slogan should be "Investigate 9/11," because the previous so-called investigation was unworthy of the description. And that's true, Mark, but a lot of people don't know that. In any event, reinvestigate 9/11, however that is taken, has the virtue of being simple and practical. And within our ranks, it supersedes differences among us on lesser fronts, from the political to the theological. Bill Brewer of New Hampshire is one of my telephone truther friends. That's what we call each other. He left me a voice message recently in which he expressed frustration with his local branch of Veterans for Peace. He said when he raises 9/11 truth, the others call him extreme. He says he's decided, okay, he'll be extreme. He told me he'll refuse to hold up a sign or otherwise support any cause other than his three main ones. And they are opposition to capital punishment, opposition to abortion, and support for 9/11 truth. Now, I happen to be with him 100% on the first one and the last one, and probably 100% against him in the middle one. But given his age and mine, I predict that Bill and I will continue to agree to disagree until we're pushing up daisies on the reproductive choice issue and yet remain firmly united on the demand for 9/11 truth. Why, in more detail, do we want a reinvestigation of 9/11? What is our ultimate purpose or purposes? Do we want truth intrinsically as an end in itself? If so, that's a worthy goal and a challenging one. Truth, however, is a very high abstraction. Now, climbing down the abstraction ladder a rung or two, we can see less abstract goals historically sought by disaffected minorities or majorities. And these include, with some overlapping, accountability, apologies, reparations, prevention of future crimes, in our case especially, putting the kibosh on further false flag ops, setting an example, establishing precedent, removing immunity and impunity from present and or future perpetrators, gaining closure, setting the record straight for future generations, revenge or reprisal, strengthening the rule of international or other law, restoring the letter and spirit of constitutions, and last but not least, reconciliation. Except for revenge and reprisal, any of these could be listed under the heading "A Better World." But I think we have to clarify, in case we're successful in getting really close to this goal of a true, large, major, honest reinvestigation. Now, I dare say most of us see 9/11 truth as needed more as an instrument to achieve some combination of these goals, in the service of larger goals, such as social and economic justice, and finally, peace, however peace may be defined. Personally, I'm okay with the most simplistic definition, absence of war. How will a big shot of 9/11 truth increase our chances of getting that improved or less terrible world? How might it speed up the process? What's likely possible and not possible or less possible? Now, let me get a little bit of negativity out of the way here. The most unrealistic goal, which is why I didn't list it, is to think that the mole-infested corporate or left gatekeeping media will provide anything resembling full, honest coverage of a full, honest reinvestigation. The facts that Elizabeth Woodward, she's here, does marvelous work. She does research for David Grave Griffin and her own work. Now, the facts that Elizabeth, through her impeccable research, has established about mainstream media exceptions to the rule of de facto censorship are important, and they are to be lauded. But Elizabeth, I think taken together, they are but a small breeze blowing against a hurricane of pro-war on terror propaganda fueled by a series of false flag ops that's only increasing in intensity. So there's a double movement, and the movement toward brainwashing and the inculcation of fear and all the rest of it is the bigger of the two movements, regrettably. Now, which reinvestigation projects are underway? I certainly don't claim to know about all of them, but I know there's the initiative of NYC CAN. There's activities in London, England. Perhaps a Brussels initiative, that Brussels is capital B, capital R, and then it follows the BR for Bertrand Russell, but it's also held in Brussels. It's a combination thing. And there are legal moves to indict George Bush, and Charlotte Dennett is here and can speak about her book on that and her work in that direction. And then there are the Calgary principles, which people here can and will speak about, I'm sure. Others here know more about these other initiatives and can speak to them, and because of this, I'm just mentioning them. Now, one initiative you probably don't know about that I'd like to describe in a bit of detail. It's called the 11/11 Project, or the International Inquest into the Events of September 11th, 2001. Now, could I have a hands up? How many people here have heard of the 11/11 Project? Well, that's what I was hoping. One hand, and that means that I can share some information that I feel will be of interest to you and perhaps is important. Now, the 11/11 Project has been quietly gathering steam for about a year. The coordinator is Daniel LeBlanc, one of Atlantic Canada's most accomplished activists. He's Canada's founding riverkeeper and co-founder of the Canadian Waterkeeper Movement, which is dedicated to bringing to justice some of the worst polluters in Canada, and we got some real big ones. His strong points are strategizing and fundraising, and he's tenacious. He's also a very nice guy. One of his recent successes was putting an end to Canada's longest environmental battle and triggering the country's largest river restoration project on the Petitcodiac River. He served for 6 years with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees in various war-torn regions of the world, including southern Africa, Iraq, Cambodia, and Ethiopia, where he saw firsthand how wars can devastate whole societies. When the light went on with him about 9/11, he decided he's got to really take whatever time and talents he's got and try to pitch in and do something serious. Now, until now, Daniel has deliberately kept a low profile while, however, consulting with, for instance, William Pepper, lawyers for 9/11 Truth, Ted Walter at NYC CAN, Kevin Ryan, Canadian legal scholars who prefer to remain anonymous at this stage, myself and a few others. Daniel couldn't attend this conference, but he agreed I could share this news with you. Now, the stated goal of the 11/11 Project is to implement a global campaign to gather, safeguard, and file legal evidence dealing with the events of 9/11 in an internationally recognized process, especially created for this purpose, an international inquest. Now, it's very interesting that was chosen, and we could go into it later if you want. The project objectives: to gather and safeguard available evidence pertaining to the events of 9/11, to have this evidence filed in a globally publicized and transparent judicial process, especially created for this purpose, to have this judicial process modeled on a coroner's inquest, review evidence presented by witnesses and independent experts, and review the key findings of the 9/11 Commission report and NIST, to have a minimum of 2 internationally respected judges, 1 American and 1 Canadian, pass judgment on the case. So the timeline. November of this year, project launch date, although work, as I say, has been going on quietly. Early 2011, international inquest members and lead counsel appointed. Spring 2011, international inquest begins. September 2011, judgment anticipated. November 2011, which is why it's called 1111, project objectives achieved. It's pretty ambitious. Now, dozens of witness accounts, expert testimonies, and documents about the events of 9/11, many currently posted on the internet, need to be sworn in and filed in such a judicial process to leave the realm of hearsay and become possible evidence in a crime. The preliminary plan to protect the evidence is in multiple countries and has been prepared. Toronto, because of its proximity to the crime scenes of New York, Washington, and Shanksville, is intended to be the location for the inquest process. Now, the next steps include expand consultation more broadly within the 9/11 movement to test for support, and I think this is the first big test of that. Convene legal experts, Canadian, American, and overseas, to settle on a unique model for this judicial process. Set up an international coordinating committee, set up local Toronto implementation committee, set up a communications committee, set up a legal committee to evolve into lead counsel, explore fundraising options, prepare for the fall 2010 project launch date with completion prior to the 10th anniversary of 9/11. David Ray Griffin and Richard Gage addressed a sold-out meeting at the University of Toronto on May 2nd. It's worth mentioning Dr. Griffin's final words at the end of the Q&A session, and I quote, "Canada could lead the way exposing their lie, which has made the world so much worse." If the 1111 Project builds serious momentum, truthers I know from coast to coast to coast in Canada would pitch in whatever ways they can. So this is a solution project. And the organizers, I agree with the organizers telling us presenters, be positive and present solutions. So this helps to offset some of the other things I'll say.
Tune in next week to hear the second and final part of that speech given by Barry Zwicker on May 16, 2010 at the Understanding Deep Politics Conference in Santa Cruz, California. And now for some 9/11 and related news updates. Jeanette McKinley passed away recently. She lived across the street from the World Trade Center complex on 9/11 and collected some of the dust from that day and gave it to some of the scientists to study. I had the pleasure of meeting her in 2008 at a Truth Emergency conference in California. I then interviewed her on the show in December of 2009, and it was shortly after that that she was diagnosed with brain cancer. She felt her illness was a direct result of being exposed to the dust created on 9/11. The interview that I did with her will be posted shortly on radioforall.net if you'd like to listen to it. She'll really be missed in the 9/11 truth movement. And now I'd like to read you a short article in the January edition of the Rock Creek Free Press called WikiLeaks, Assange, Whistleblower or Intelligence Operative. Julian Assange, Rock Creek Free Press Man of the Year. And here goes. There's no question that the documents, cables, and emails released by WikiLeaks are genuine. They are. Yet questions surround the site and its most visible figurehead, Julian Assange. Even if the information is genuine, is it complete? Is there undisclosed cherry-picking of the data to support some hidden agenda? Is the site an intel agency honeypot intended to lure and entrap would-be leakers? And what of the mysterious Mr. Assange? Will he be derailed by trumped-up rape charges? And what about his unusual childhood in an Australian cult commune? Could the cult have been an MK-Ultra-style mind-control experiment? In this issue of The Creek, we investigate WikiLeaks from many angles, including articles from both champions and critics of the site. And we hear from Mr. Assange himself. Whatever you think of WikiLeaks or Assange, the information they have released has dominated the news for weeks and will likely resonate for months and years to come. For dominating the hard news like no one else, we named Julian Assange the Rock Creek Free Press Man of the Year. If you want to read the nearly 2.5 full pages of articles about WikiLeaks and Assange, go to the website rockcreekfreepress.com or come to the next Progressive Movie Night on January 26th and we'll give you a copy of the paper. I'll tell you more about the movie night on future broadcasts. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.